This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today on Rocket Ship, we have a very special treat for you. We talk with Austin Bales. He's a director of product design at Facebook. We talk to him all about how he makes product decisions, how he builds a product team, and even how he comes into existing product teams and builds trust. These are essential tools for any product manager, especially product managers working inside larger organizations. I can tell you now, this is a treat to talk to Austin. So, stay tuned. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
Great. And so tell me a bit about that director role. What does your day-to-day generally look like? What are you overseeing?
Today I'm a design director on growth, and specifically I support the core growth team, which helps grow Facebook's community and connect people to Facebook. So I kind of think about it like the front door of Facebook, all of our like login and sign up and our logged out experiences. We actually have a really big logged out presence for things like places and interesting content for people to discover. What we call growth infrastructure, which is basically all of the tooling we need to support growing Facebook. That includes things like our internal data tools, which we have design working on now kind of for the first time in the company's history, which is a really cool and very different design problem than designing consumer experiences. And then also I support the design team for Facebook in Tel Aviv. And they work across both areas and specifically work on, one of their big areas is Facebook Lite, which is a lightweight, very fast version of Facebook for what we call typical Android devices. So Android devices that are maybe typical in the rest of the world, but aren't the like high-end today's models that, some folks in the United States might have or the Western world might have.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about hiring a bit. What do you look for when you're looking to build your team, specifically for like a product manager or someone working on the product side?
I'm involved in product management hiring because product managers are really key partners to designers. But I would say that I'm not the person who's deciding on exactly who we should hire or what we're looking for out of a product manager. I obviously have my own opinions, but I generally focus on just hiring for individual designers and product design managers. But when we interview product managers, I look for people who are going to be great at building teams, who are going to be excellent partners to designers and data scientists and engineers, and who can excite the people they're working with, as well as people who are, really great operators, meaning that they can figure out how to manage a project, put together meetings and notes and decks and communicate, the right way to the people on their team and their managers and stakeholders. And I think operations is a operations or project management is a tremendously important part of what a product manager does. In addition to like the product work and the vision and figuring out what we're going to do, which is something that I think is meant to be shared between all of the functions in a product team. And at Facebook, it's typical to have, you know, a product manager, a product designer, any number of engineers, a data scientist, a content strategist, a researcher. In some areas, we also have growth marketers who, you know, help reach people off Facebook, but also help us with messaging and promoting features and reaching people on Facebook. So there's a lot of different points of view on a Facebook product team. And we really look to product managers to help organize those points of view and make sure that everyone has a voice and that we're all working on the most important things.
Very nice. Yeah, no, I like that. I appreciate the answer, even though it may not be your focus. What is your process to approaching a new problem? When Facebook gives you a new assignment, something that you may not be familiar with, what does your process look to determine what type of solution to pursue?
Well, I think it's important to start with understanding a problem. We actually have a framework that we use within growth and that I try to use personally, understand, identify, execute. And that first step is understanding your goal and why it matters. And so at a high level, you want to understand for a given project, like, why is this even important for us to do? Is it important for us to do? And how does this project connect to Facebook's overall mission of, you know, bringing the world closer together? And you want to be able to substantiate your project through data and through research and through feedback from people so that you know that you're working on something that really matters. Because you could do a really great job on a feature or project, but if it actually doesn't matter to the community and the mission, then you've sort of wasted your time. So the first step in building any project roadmap or getting involved in a project is to develop a deep understanding of your goal and why it matters. And this sort of happens recursively, right? Because a team will have a goal and the whole team or organization needs to understand their goal and why it matters and how it connects to Facebook's mission. And then when you start a project, you have to connect your project to that team's goal so that, you know, throughout the company, everything winds up connecting back to that same central, same central mission.
And how do you communicate that mission to the team? I know it comes from, you know, obviously from the CEO down. But is that something that you have to remind the team of as you're working?
Ideally, it's not on any one of us or any one manager or organizational leader to communicate the mission to the team. It's something we all own. And in building roadmaps and planning projects together, we actually want the teams to be proposing their goals and their product ideas and their features idea, to their peers, to the rest of the team, and to their managers and other stakeholders, including executives like Mark or Chris Cox, our chief product officer, or Javier, who leads growth. So Facebook is not a top-down environment. We have a high-level mission and mandate, and then we try to use understanding and insights about our community and the way people use our products to determine what we're going to do.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show. You guys obviously have a wealth of data that you have access to when making these product decisions. How do you integrate data into your design decisions, and how do you let it influence the direction of the product?
Oh, it can influence the product in so many different ways. In terms of how we integrate data, I actually think, so when we're talking about data, you're usually talking about raw data, right? And that's why we have a great team of data engineers who work with product teams to measure and measure how people are using the products. And then we have data scientists or data analysts who can take that raw data and extract insights from it. Because you don't want to just look at a chart of how people use something blindly. There's a lot of factors that go into how people use something or don't use something or how they move through a flow. And, it's a science and a process to translate those, litany of numbers into something that that has, that's a meaningful insight about the way people use our products. So I think the first step of how we integrate data is that we rely on experts to give us insights from that data. And, going back to understand, identify, execute, after you really understand your goal or problem space, and you often use data to demonstrate how your project or product, impacts or affects the community, then we move to the second step, which is identify. Identify the best ways to achieve your goal. And so often we use data to look for opportunities in a flow or to look for opportunities where we think like there's a clear need for a given product or a feature. And today people aren't having that need met. Or, we know from research that people want to do X, Y, or Z thing, but yet it's not happening today. And so we use data in a more refined way to find places where people fall off or stop doing something or where they give us feedback that they're, more or less interested in a specific feature. And we use that data to identify opportunities for us to take on in a given period of time, depending on what period of time your team plans work in. So basically data is integrated at the high level because it's an important part of understanding why you're doing what you're doing at all. And then also in the more project level planning process where we use data to see if there's like specific design or product opportunities. And we rely on data scientists to help paint a picture of the landscape of the way the product works.
Yeah. Have there been times when the data was telling you didn't see what the data was necessarily telling you, or the interpretation of the data may have been slightly off? I'm just wondering if you had a product example where maybe the data was misread.
I think there are so many different ways to read data. There, I recall one time where this was in a previous team. We were working on the photo viewer and some other sort of improvements to the way comments work in newsfeed. And at the time, our photo viewer had both a gesture, so you can swipe a photo away, which is commonplace in Facebook and a lot of other products in the ecosystem now. And it also had an explicit close button. And we were talking about how we would incorporate gestures in this new feature we were working on. And, there was a group of people who were like, we need to go all in on gestures because it's the most natural and fast way to close this view, to close the comments view. And then there was another group of people equally passionate who said, no one can figure out a gesture. No one uses these gestures. And when we incorporated it in the photo viewer, no one used it. And the counterpoint to that was like, well, people will figure it out. And there was kind of data that supported both arguments, but this was a time where actually I decided, okay, I'm going to look at the data myself. I'm going to try to get a picture of this over time. And what we found was that both groups of people were right. At the beginning, people didn't know how to use it. And so if we had relied only on gestures at the beginning, people would be very confused as to how to close a photo viewer, or in this new case, how to dismiss a comment view. But it was also true that people found out how to do this over time. And that when people found out how to do this, they were much more likely to close the view, by swiping away than they were to use the button. Because I think, the point of view that it's more natural and fast is also accurate. And so rather than say we're going to go all in on a button and the gestures don't matter, or we're going to go all in on the gesture and people need to figure it out, we actually, you know, did both, just like we wound up doing with the photo viewer. And that way we can provide a really obvious signifier and affordance for an important thing, which is like getting out of where you are now. This is on iOS, where we don't have the Android back button. But we can also provide this gesture, which, you know, we feel and is a great experience, and that we're also confident people can learn in the long run, or many people can learn in the long run. And so I think there, using the data helped us, you know, take a center path, and also acknowledge that, you know, that there are, that those two points of view are right. So that was an interesting time where the data could have been misleading. I think there's also been like a number of examples from my time on my last team where it's difficult to judge if a change we're making is going to be meaningful in the long term, or if it's just meaningful in the short term. And that can lead to a lot of debates, you know, like even if it's something small, like we want to change an icon, you know, in the header of a view in Messenger, for example. And maybe the new icon, you know, attracts, you know, more use today, but the designers sort of feel, oh, well, it's just because it's new, or it's not actually communicating something significant and different. And again, we could take a very principled and firm look at this and say, you know, this isn't the right icon, we're not going to do it. Or, you know, we see from the data that this leads to more people being interested in this feature, and so we absolutely need to do it. And at Facebook, we try to take the center path, which is like, well, let's test this change. And even if we decide to launch this change, we'll keep a small group of people in the previous version of the experience for an extended period of time, so we can validate if this is something that truly matters, or if it was just if there was a lot of novelty bias at work. And when we do this, we don't just look at like how many times someone might engage with a given feature. We actually look at, or a given button or view, we actually look at how it affects their experience on the product overall. Because again, we're not just, the work we're doing is not just about having people like take a small specific action. We really care about, you know, why this is important to a higher level goal or mission. So in Messenger, it's like we want to, you know, help people communicate every day. Yeah. And so people could use a feature a little bit more in the short term, but if we don't see in the long term that it's helping people, more people communicate every day, then maybe it's not a meaningful change. Maybe we should revisit it. So there's plenty of opportunities where you could let short-term data or looking at data in too narrow fashion mislead you. And I think that we've been pretty good at eventually getting to the right place in all of these things. It doesn't mean there aren't like disagreements or conflicts along the way between these points of view. But it's great to see that. And I think this is, you know, partially due to having such a great data science team, that in the long run, we make corrections and do what's right for people using the products.
Absolutely. Those are fantastic examples. Thanks for sharing them. It helps to kind of understand, right, how data can be used, which is great. I'm wondering what's one of the tougher challenges that you've been tasked with taking on, or tougher problems that you've been tasked with taking on at Facebook, and how did you approach it?
I think I can answer that question in different ways, from projects like design problems that I've worked on to more team or management problems that I've worked on.
That's a good point. Yeah. No, let's take it from a design problem.
Okay. Well, I happen to be working now in an area that's very similar to to the area that I worked on when I first joined Facebook. I was working on sort of new user experiences. And I worked briefly on the controls and features that allow people to, you know, send friend requests and see people they may know. And then afterwards, I worked on designing the new user experience and sort of like setup flow for Messenger. And I went into that, you know, maybe with startup or agency experience, kind of thinking like, oh, this is going to be really easy, right? It's just a bunch of screens. We're going to collect some required information, ask people to turn on push notifications, and then we're going to get into the product. And you know, so why is this my full-time project, or why is everyone saying it's going to take so long? And that turned out to be a really challenging design problem, because there were a lot of requirements that my previous experience hadn't prompted me to think about. First, there were things that seemed simple, like push notifications or confirming your phone number, that I hadn't thought about at this scale, because, you know, Messenger is like a mobile texting product, or at base was a mobile texting product. And so it really mattered that you know that you can reach people instantly, and you know that you're going to, that someone will be notified, and they know that you'll be notified. So unlike a product that, you know, previous products I'd worked on, that was like a pivotal moment. And we really need to explain the value of a simple thing like turning on notifications really quickly. And we also know that we won't, you know, it's hard to get a second chance, because once someone says no to that permission dialogue, you know, you have to say, well, if you actually want this, then you have to go to your settings and tap here and tap there. And at the time, you couldn't even jump someone to that view. And so that was a difficult design problem. And it also meant like working deeply with content strategy, which I hadn't done a lot of at a startup or an agency.
And interesting, then, yeah.
And then there was more complexity, and, you know, you want to ask for people's phone numbers so that you can type in a phone number and reach someone, because that's, you know, how a lot of people are used to texting each other from SMS and iMessage and WhatsApp. And we knew that that was important. But we needed to explain that to people in a clear and concise way. But at the same time, we also needed to provide some legally required notices that say, you know, if you do this, then someone's going to be able to type your phone number in and find you on Messenger so they can message you. And in this case, there was like specific language that, you know, the legal team was like, this is exactly how we think you should say it. This has to be clear and prominent. And then the content strategists and the design team were like, well, will people really understand if we use that exact language? Will they get the value? And so we wound up spending, you know, weeks just working on that screen, because getting to a place where we found something that met all of the requirements and communicated clear to people meant that we had to, user test a number of flows and show the results of those user tests to stakeholders for policy and legal and the product team and content strategy. And we had to constantly refine those to get to a place where we felt like, you know, we're doing what's required by policy, and we're doing the right thing for people. And also, the most important thing in my mind is that when we talk to people, you know, in a research session, they really do understand what this is and why we're asking for it. And so that was a complex design problem that I hadn't anticipated. And then the final thing on that made it complicated in a way I had never experienced before was that Facebook targets like every kind of device, every screen size of Android, every version, you know, so many past versions of iOS and Android at the time, across, you know, two platforms. And so every screen that I designed had to be fully responsive to device size, but also whether or not you had a physical keyboard, because that was still a thing at the time, or an Android keyboard, an iOS keyboard, different screen orientations, and sizes and dimensions. And so trying to figure out how to just specify a screen across such a range of sizes was really difficult. And I think it was difficult for the engineers to implement too. And at a startup, you know, I worked at the startup owned by Salesforce previously, and we did like task and project management apps and software. We could kind of rely on like, our user base is mostly going to use this or that device. And because their company is going to use it, if they have to scroll or some, they have to kind of put a little more thought in figuring out how to get through the sign-in flow or login flow, it's probably okay because, you know, because there's other people bought in and because, you know, the audience is more uniform. So, this was hard just because this was hard on so many levels, stakeholders and also designing for scale, and diversity of audience that I hadn't experienced before. So that was a very tough, design problem I worked on early on at Facebook.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Now back to the show.
And it's a really unique challenge to a company at scale too, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting to hear about. I'd love to hear from the management perspective how you would answer that question as well.
I think there have been a couple things that have been challenging. One is, the most recent one is that when I moved from Messenger, where I was before leading design for that team, to my current team, unlike my time on Messenger, where I had to take a small design team that I worked directly with all the designers and was deeply involved in their work and all of their meetings, and worked directly with their PMs. And I hired managers, so we were able to grow our team sort of organically, and we grew together. So I had close relationships with everyone. When I moved to a new team and started managing this group of managers, they were already, they were already comfortable with their roles. They'd been doing it for a while. Everyone was doing an amazing job and all the teams were very healthy. And I didn't have those like deep pre-existing relationships. I hadn't worked with all those designers. I hadn't seen those designers become managers themselves. And so figuring out how to join a team as a team leader and support those people was challenging. I think maybe still is challenging. Because you want to bring your expertise and your past experience from the other teams I've managed at Facebook. But you also want to respect that they have a great thing going, that they have their own strengths, and that they'll be different people from managers you've worked with in the past. And it's a different group with different goals and maybe a different approach to product development and design. So that's been kind of challenging. And it has been great to, over the past 6 or 8 months, see the relationships between the people I work with deepen. And I think we feel more comfortable with each other. And as that happens, I also feel more comfortable bringing my opinions on the way we should run our team and the way we should do design work into the fold.
So what are some of the ways that you began to build those relationships or build that trust so you could have an honest conversation?
I think like the general advice is to start with getting to know people, and getting to understand, their strengths and the work that they like to do, understanding the things that they like to avoid, understanding the way that things worked in the past, and withholding your judgment or evaluation, of all of those things. And so that's kind of like how you can connect at a personal level. But I actually think that to build like a trusting relationship, it maybe takes working through something complicated or encountering some sort of friction or adversity together, right? Like a shared experience. If everything's just going well all the time, what is the substance for, what substance are you going to discuss? You can talk about how someone might want to grow, and be proactive, and working with them on that or finding new opportunities for someone. One thing that I did was for the growth team is help with recruiting designers and design managers. So that's kind of a value that I can add early on to that team. I also have been at Facebook for a while, and I've worked with a lot of different product teams like Newsfeed and Messenger. And so another thing I tried to provide was connections to some of those people I know. And I can use my time to talk with them and understand perspectives from other teams. So those are some of the things that I emphasized earlier on, where I could just kind of provide additional value without thinking about changing or challenging or doing something different. As we've had shared experiences and as we've encountered things like, well, now our team's growing because our teams at Facebook grow, and you know, we're gearing up for 2018 and we're going to do even more next year. Things like our critique process has come up. Design critiques are, you know, an essential way that a component of the way that designers work and get formative feedback from peers and critical feedback from peers. And as your team goes from, you know, 4 to 8 and then 8 to 12 and 12 to 18, the structures you use to facilitate design critique and the groups and the size of the room and the cadence, all of these things, you know, naturally need to change. And so something my whole team has worked on together recently is understanding how design critique is working for us. Does it feel useful to the designers? Is it something they value? Do they feel comfortable sharing? Do they feel comfortable sharing at every stage of the process? And, you know, we had to work with a designer on our team who used to be a researcher to run a survey, and we used that information to put together a plan of how we were going to just like iterate on our design process together. And so that's been a great thing to do with, you know, the two managers on my team in Menlo Park and this designer and the whole team. And I think there'll be more and more of those opportunities to do, you know, new things together or make changes to the way our team works as our team evolves. But I think it would have been, you know, I had instincts about where I thought this should go when I first joined the team, for example. And I think it probably would have been a mistake to try to make those changes immediately because we hadn't had that history together and because the opportunity hadn't presented itself organically. And, you know, maybe it took 6 months for this opportunity to present itself, but now it has. And I think we're all excited about, you know, what we've decided on doing together.
Yeah. Patience is a virtue sometimes, right?
Yes, definitely.
That's what it sounds like, right? Like waiting for the right opportunity. Yeah. I know it's really tough when you're a manager, you move in, you want to kind of figure out where you fit, but I love the patience and letting the opportunities come up to where you can be useful instead of trying to force yourself into a useful position.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that can almost create anxiety because you want to know that you're being useful and you want to be useful, you know, as soon as you can. But having patience there and learning the right ways and how people want you to be useful is important.
It's a bit of your own self-worth too, right? On the line. Yeah. But I guess being confident in your own capability allows you to have that patience, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing. Where can people keep up with you online?
You know, it's funny. I feel like in the past, I've been more active online.
I hear you.
I post on Facebook and I'm active on Twitter, though I'm taking a break from the Twitter app. I'm AR Bales on Twitter. I've written some stuff on Medium, one about design hiring, but I've been really focused on, you know, the work that I do at Facebook and my team. And also you know, my friends and family for the past couple of years. But if you're interested, you can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and all those places.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate talking with you today.
Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it.
And when you can, go to rocketship.fm and scroll all the way down and leave your email with us. We'll let you know about upcoming episodes, but we'll also get you in on a Slack channel with thousands of other product people and all sorts of other good stuff that we know you'll be interested in.
So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review. Or tell a friend, or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple days.